You know, right now, teachers' unions and gun control advocates are calling for an end to students participating in school shooting drills. They call them ineffective and traumatizing.
And the question we have is, should we end school shooting drills with kids in Washington? And joining us right now is our state superintendent of public instruction, Chris Rakedahl. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us on the Gene Ursula Show. Just right off the bat, do you believe active shooter and lockdown drills are traumatizing?
There's a version of them that are very traumatizing. Our state has, in fact, stopped short of mandating active shooter drills. We do traditional fire drills, escape drills, and shelter-in-place drills, which can be as mild as, hey, there's a bank robbery next door, or there's a chemical release next door, so we need to shelter in place. We don't mandate those really intensive, traumatizing shooter drills where kids wear fake blood and teachers are shot with, you know, rubber bullets. We don't mandate that, but we do think some schools in our state are doing it. And on balance, I do not think they are appropriate.
Chris, according to research cited by teachers' unions and gun control advocates, school shooting drills haven't made students any safer. What do you think about that?
Well, there was no research that said that they would. That's the irony, right? We're in this moment in our nation's history where it's really an acute worry we have. And as you and I have talked about in the past, the much bigger risk to our kids is suicide. We lose two school-age kids a week to suicide. That's probably 600 or 800 students every 4 years. This state has only had one student lose their life to an active shooter in school. So there was this rush to get everybody ready for active shooter when it is such a low probability event. And so I don't think there was research that said it was helpful on balance. These companies rush in to make money trying to prepare schools for this event. It clearly raises anxiety in kids. It promotes the belief that guns are everywhere when in fact they are not in our schools, not in any alarming rate. And the risk is so much greater on the mental health side than on active shooter side. And that's why I'm pleased our state didn't go the full way that other states did. And I would strongly suggest that districts pull away from anything that is an active shooter drill with students in the building. You can train teachers on this. And that's what I think these national advocate groups are saying, is train teachers on how to prepare. But there's little to no value in training students.
And just to be clear, what is it then that we are doing in our state? I mean, so you said it goes just short of that, but is it uniform across the state or different districts are doing different things?
Yeah, districts are doing different things. The only uniformity is that there's a sequence to this. Essentially every month they need to have a drill in their district. And so fire drills are very common, as you remember. Some are pre-announced and some are not. There's definitely earthquake drills, and we do those at least once a year. Many districts do it multiple times a year. That's, again, a far bigger risk for us as a seismic event. And then there is a requirement to do a shelter-in-place drill, and that's where I'm saying it can be really different. For some, it's, they announce it in advance. Kids know what it is. They maybe tell them it's a situation outside the building, and so we're going to huddle in place. But some of them have used shelter in place to be a proxy for active shooter. And again, not a lot of districts, but some of them do that. And some have gone so far as to train teachers, how to use a bat or a weapon against an active shooter. And that's where there's just tons of variability from district to district.
That is the voice of Washington State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Rakedahl, here joining the G and Ursula Show. Chris, yesterday we talked to Keenan Lowe, who actually stopped a school shooter at Park Rose High School down there in Oregon. This is what he told us about the idea of teachers carrying guns.
You know, the thought of it, of a teacher teaching class but also having a gun on them or a gun in their desk and in multiple rooms in a classroom, the thought of that is scary to me.
Chris, what do you think about teachers, about them, about arming teachers?
Well, again, they should not have weapons. There's just no evidence that would be helpful. And the only research we have is that gun density is highly correlated with homicide and suicide. So the more guns you have in any environment, the higher the probability of risk. You can imagine teachers who are facing domestic violence, teachers who
sadly, have their own mental health issues, students finding weapons, which we've observed around the country, not appropriate whatsoever, not helpful, and will do more harm than good. So no, we should not be arming teachers. We should be preparing them to keep their kids as safe as possible through, again, these shelter-in-place drills and release drills. But we have to keep the trade-offs in our minds here. Everyone races to the idea that someone should have a gun. They never think about the massive downside of how much more suicide and homicide will be created by the presence of guns.
You mentioned the mental health component and the increase in the number of suicides. What, in a perfect world, would you want to have happen at the school level in dealing with mental health and suicide?
It's a really powerful question. I think every expert is asking themselves. I think it comes into two ways. One is you clearly want to identify the stressors that maybe we are contributing in our world to student stress and family stress, and you want to address those. And obviously homelessness is a stressor, and chemical dependency is a stressor, and there's these other things that I think public policy tries to address. The second part of it is there will still be people under any scenario who find themselves in this difficult place. We've got to teach kids how to access resources, either for themselves, a family member, somebody they know. And so we are having conversations with kids much earlier in our health curriculum, talking about mental health now and where they get help, what signs should they look for, how do they refer somebody, how do they talk to a counselor or a safe adult about it. So it's preventative, and it's also what do you do when you find yourself in an environment where that's present.
Chris, we're speaking with Chris Rakedahl, the state superintendent of public instruction for the state of Washington. And while we're talking about education and what should be taught at what level, I know that there has been a lot of discussion about the sexual health education bill or bills that are circulating in Olympia right now. And one of them would require every Washington school district to teach some form of sex ed in kindergarten through 12th grade. And I get the sense that there is a lot of misinformation or misconceptions about what this would do if it, in fact, were to pass. What do you think is the most important message for parents who are worried, like, I don't want my kindergartner to be taught about sex or to be taught about, you know, anything that should be happening at the home? What do you think are some of the misconceptions that are out there?
Well, first of all, I think there are a lot of misconceptions, and I think there's a lot of intentional misleading information out there trying to stop this because people live with this sense of fear, and I want to help them understand that. So here's what I would say to folks. For almost as long as we've been in public schools, we've had this age-appropriate concept, and folks have believed this. Fifth or sixth grade, we teach about reproduction because they're going through puberty. Very few people have questioned that, and we've always given families the right to opt out of that. What we're talking about now is for the older grades, revisit this, particularly around sexual assault, where we're just seeing a continued growth of sexual violence and sexual aggression. So you need an older kid curriculum that comes and revisits these topics. And then the younger kid curriculum isn't actually sexual health education at all, and I wish we used a different label for it. We don't teach about reproduction and body parts and all of that. What we're teaching them in really young grades, sort of back to the building blocks of all this, do you know who you are? Do you have a safe adult to talk to? Do you understand that it's inappropriate for an adult to touch your body? It's building these concepts of self-protection. So by the time they get to late elementary or middle and they're talking about reproduction, they understand their bodies and their rights. And by the time we get to high school, we're talking about avoidance behaviors and sexual activity. All of it is embedded with abstinence. That's a part of our law. All of it is adopted locally. There is no state mandate about the curriculum or the content. And every parent has the right to opt out of any of it or all of it. And if people knew that, and when we are able to talk to them, they say, that makes a lot of sense. It's community-based. We choose our materials. It's age-appropriate. It's science-based. And we think we can protect kids better with this.
That's Chris Rakedahl, Washington State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Chris, thanks so much for joining G and Ursula's show, man.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Congrats on the show. And let me know if you need anything else on this or anything education.
Thank
All
you.
Right.
Appreciate
thanks a lot,
it.
Chris. Really appreciate that.
Okay, bye.